Right. Well, there's something about that episode of Angel Wrestling that kind of rings a bell with us, but there's also something very, very mysterious about it. It's like, what is going on? And that bit about the angel, when the angel saw that he could not prevail over him. What's, isn't an angel stronger than a man? Couldn't the angel have flattened him in one go if he'd wanted to? Why, Jacob is very scared. He thinks his brother is, coming with armed men to kill them all. What's so wonderful about having an angel wrestle with you when you're facing that? Hopefully, all will be explained, or at least some of it will be explained. And I would like to suggest ways in which it can be significant for us. Needless to say, there's a whole backstory to this episode, which some of you will know. Some of you will know the story of Jacob and Esau and the kind of strange happenings that go on between them. But first, there's immediate context, which I think we got a sense of in that reading. Jacob has been with his uncle Laban, and just say the relationship between him and Laban has broken down completely, and Jacob thinks, I've got to get out of here. And he feels called to go back home, but there's a small issue of his brother Esau to face, because the reason he left home and went quite a distance and ended up staying with Uncle Laban is that his brother wanted to kill him. So what does he do? He's caught, he can't stay with Uncle Laban. He's got to go back home. He's got to face Esau. What is going to happen? So, in order to get a sense of what really is going on, let's go right back to the beginning, because Jacob and Esau are twins. And when their mother is pregnant with them, she feels them jostling in the womb. And that's like she thinks there's going to be competition between these two. Now, rings a bell. Although twins actually can often, and the ones that I've heard about of can be very, very close. They might compete with each other, but they can be very close, but not these two. They are chalk and cheese. So when it comes to the birth, Esau comes out first, but Jacob seems to have his hands wrapped around one of Esau's leg. And, that's a culture where these things aren't just random happenings. There's kind of significance in that. So they give him a name because they think that's quite significant. And they give him the name Jacob, in Hebrew, Yaakov. And that is a name with a meaning, like most of our names are. And Yaakov is a verb based on the noun Akov. And Akov means a heel. So literally, he's named, he heals. Well, what is the significance of healing someone? What does that mean? Well, straight answer, we don't know for sure. Translators have to make a guess, an intelligent guess. If you look at your NIV, you'll find that it suggests that Yaakov means he deceives. I'm not so inclined to go with that. I think it's about the significance of it is that when they see that hand wrapped around that, and they see there's obviously they felt this competition going on, it's like Jacob is not happy about the fact that Esau is coming out first. That means he's firstborn. In that culture, firstborn, a lot hangs on being firstborn. So it's almost like he's trying to pull him back, pull him back so he can get on ahead. That's the kind of thing. So I would suggest it means he grasps or he is grasping. But there's another, the RSV goes with he supplants or he usurps. So that's the kind of, I think either way, it's the idea of pulling someone back who you feel is ahead of you and you want to pull them back so you can get ahead. So, and just to add spice into the mix, there is a prophecy that comes with the birth, and it really is adding spice into the mix because the prophecy is that the elder will serve the younger. Now that's big because in that culture, firstborn has the lion's share of the inheritance. They have, you know, the kind of they're the person, they're the responsibility goes with them. So they're growing up and they have very different personalities. Jacob is a very self-contained, thoughtful guy. You might say quite calculating. And Esau is a get up and go person. He is, you know, he's first down the pub and he's probably last to come out. And all his mates are with him and he's probably the life and soul of the party. You know, he's probably the center of attention and he loves just getting out. He loves doing stuff. He's active. He loves hunting. Jacob is meanwhile at home. He is this sort of quiet, self-contained, thoughtful guy. And to add even more spice into the mix, that Esau is his dad's favorite. Jacob is his mum's favorite. So they're growing up, and my guess, it doesn't actually say this in the text, is that Jacob was made aware of the prophecy by his mum. And so his mind is whirring. Questions. Okay, so Esau, in the normal course of thing, is going to be the firstborn. He's going to get the lion's share of the inheritance. He's going to carry the family name, as it were. But this prophecy seems to say it's going to be reversed. Well, how is that going to happen? You know, does it happen by magic? And it gets even worse because Esau is dad's favorite. I mean, dad's never going to accept any reversal of that. So, what, you know, and the wheels are whirring in his mind. And then he starts to think, wonder how we can make this happen. And then he gets a golden opportunity. And he manages, his brother is quite weak, really, in some ways. And he manages to manipulate his brother into signing over his firstborn rights. And here's how it happens. Jacob is coming home and he's just had a great day's hunting. It's been absolutely fabulous. And he comes in and this stew that Jacob has been making, he's a very good cook. And he comes in, oh, it just smells so good. Oh, and I'm absolutely famished. You know what? This could be the perfect ending to one of the best days of my life. Jacob, old chap, dish up the stew quick. I'm ready to tuck in. So, what? You'll give it to me on a condition? Well, what are you on about? What? You want me to sign over my rights as firstborn? Are you mad? Oh, for goodness sake, just give me the food. Yeah, all right, whatever you want, whatever you want. Yeah. What? You want me to swear an oath? All right. Okay. Yeah. All right. I swear by Almighty God, blah, blah, blah. May God strike me dead if blah, 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 blah. Right. Are we done now? Are you satisfied? You got what you want? Right. Dish up the damn food. So that's the kind of. Now, I think we have to imagine that he wakes up the next day, probably after a hangover, and he might be regretting this a bit. And as time goes on, he's probably very sore about it. Now, you might say a lot of it is his own fault, but Esau is not a reflexive person. He you know, he's more likely to think I was robbed. Now, as for Jacob, I think we have to assume that his motive is not just pure greed. I think Jacob's looking at his brother. And remember, in this culture, firstborn is not just about receiving the lion's share of the inheritance. It is carrying responsibility. And there's an added thing that these two are grandchildren of Abraham. And there's a particular spiritual calling and a promise attached with that. So the firstborn carries the weight of that spiritual calling. And I think when Jacob looks at his brother Esau and thinks, is he really a worthy torchbearer for this spiritual calling? I don't think so. I think Jacob had a point. But there we go. But he used his own wiles. He used his own cunning, his own craftiness to get it out of. And now, obviously, there is bad blood between the two. And it's going to get worse because we scroll forward and Dad is now an old man. And I think we have to assume that Dad is not happy about this firstborn rights being handed over because Esau is his favorite. He loves Esau. And he's thinking maybe he wants to do something about it. So he arranges this meeting with private meeting with Esau because he says, I want to bless you. Again, we have to go back into that culture, and a patriarchal blessing in the context of this spiritual calling is something quite strange and mysterious and powerful. A blessing carries power, and it's almost like a spirit of prophecy comes over them. And when they say something, when Abraham or Isaac or Jacob says something, you know, God is in that. So what is going on? What is he trying to do? Is he trying to actually think that having had the firstborn rights wrestled away from his favorite, he wants to sort of get it back? Well, if he was thinking that, he'd be kidding himself, because in that culture, if you swear an oath, an oath is not just a turn of phrase. It is a very, very, you know, you really do. If you don't keep to the oath, you expect there to be trouble from on high. So it's really equivalent in our culture of signing a legal document. That's the power it had. He'd be trying to reverse something that's a done deal. Or maybe he's thinking, well, look, I can't reverse the actual signing away the firstborn, but maybe I can sort of bless him so that he still gets, you know, the effects that come with being firstborn, which would be like Esau having his cake and eat it. He'd have all the goodies and none of the responsibilities. The mum, remember Jacob is mum's favorite, she gets to hear about this little cunning plan, and it is quite off, let's say, offhand, because in that culture, again, a blessing is like the reading of a will. It should be done with all the family around, and Jacob wants to do, Isaac, Dad wants to do it on the quiet to try and sort of reverse it. And mum goes into panic and says, right, Dad is about to bless your older brother. You need to get in. You need to put on a disguise because he's got different kind of skin. And you need to pretend to be your older brother. So that's what he does. And he manages. Dad's a little bit querulous because it's not quite the same voice, but he's blind by that time. He manages to get taken in. Jacob gets the blessing. Then lo and behold, after having given the blessing, Esau comes in. Dad, where's my blessing? Come on, you giving me a blessing? Oh, I've given it to your brother. I can't give it to you. I've given it to your brother. Now that again is quite weird for us because we're thinking, well, hold on. If you sign a legal document under false pretenses, or you make a false claim, or you put a false signature on there, it's not valid. So why is that valid? And that's something we, you know, when we read that story, we go, what's going on? Surely he'd just say, okay, wrong person. You pretended. It's not valid. But I think what's going on. Isaac, the dad, seems to accept it. He seemed to accept, even though he didn't want it, he seems to accept that the blessing has gone to Jacob. And I think what's going on is he realizes that what he's trying to do in reversing both the prophecy and the swearing away of the firstborn, he realizes that what he's trying to do wasn't legitimate. It was never going to happen. God wasn't in it. So it's like that firstborn going over to Jacob was a done deal. He couldn't reverse it. But that really means the bad blood between the two brothers now, that has really, really upped the ante. He already thought the thing had been robbed from him. He's now double, you know. And then mum says to Jacob, look, I know that your brother wants to kill you. You better get out. So he runs away, and he ends up with his uncle Laban. And you might say that's out of the frying pan. Not so much out of the frying pan into the fire, but out of the frying pan under the grill, because Uncle Laban, let's just say, has no scruples whatsoever. And it's like he sees Jacob coming. Oh, Jacob, so pleased to see you. Ha ha ha. Something like that. I mean, okay, that's a caricature, but not that much of a caricature, because Laban sees, he realizes his nephew is in a position of weakness, and he thinks he can exploit that. And he's looking for his opportunity. And lo, he gets it handed into him on his plate, because Jacob falls madly in love with Laban's daughter, with his cousin. And Laban is rubbing his hands and thinking, right, I've got him now. And Jacob, yeah, he's normally quite a thoughtful, calculating person who thinks it all through, but he's in love. And that all goes out of the window. Well, it does when you're in love. So he gets permission. He obviously, Laban realizes he's got him on two counts. He's the father. Jacob has to have his permission to have his daughter, to wed his daughter. And number two, there's the small matter of a dowry, because again, in that culture, the husband's family has to pay a dowry, a large bride price, to the family of the bride or to the bride. So, yeah, and Jacob's on his own. He hasn't got his family, so it's all down to him. And then he thinks he can do a double whammy. So they have the wedding. It's all, you know, lots of drink. And then Jacob gets escorted to the bridal chamber. Again, in that culture, that's almost like a little ceremony. And I think we have to assume that Jacob is semi-inebriated. And what happens is Jacob brings in his daughter, but not Rachel, who he's fallen in love with, but the other one, his older one, Leah, who he is not in love with at all. Jacob, all fired up, but not very aware of what's going on, wakes up next morning and finds that he's been in bed with Leah. Now, Laban's really got him now, because in that culture, for a sort of man of kind of power, your daughter's virginity is a big deal, and if you take your daughter's virginity, that's it. You marry her. As the dad says, you marry her, you marry her. So Jacob's got no choice, even though he's been had. And, it was a small matter of the dowry, which Jacob didn't think about that. He didn't sort of come to it. That's the sort of thing you would normally negotiate before you come in, but Jacob's in love. He hadn't been thinking. And, there's a dowry to pay. Yeah, that'd be 7 years labor. Okay. And if you do 7 years labor, I'll let you have Rachel as well. So he's still so in love with Rachel, he puts up with that. He does the 7 years labor, and he gets to the end of it. And Laban says, okay, now you can have Rachel. Dowry. Ah, you know the drill. 7 years labor again. So another 7 years labor, and he comes to the end of the 14 years, and he's thinking, right, Laban has not just had my wages, he's had the skin off me back. I want something for myself. I'm not sticking around here forever. I want to get back home, and I don't want to go back penniless. So he comes up with this kind of scheme, weird scheme, to try and get one over on his uncle, in revenge. And the scheme is basically, he says to Laban, right, all the sheep and that are speckled, I'll have. And Laban looks at this and thinks, oh, that looks like a good deal because there's not many sheep that are going to be speckled. So I'll go with that deal. And Laban, Jacob comes up with this crackpot scheme, which you read it and you think, what on earth is going on that he thinks that's going to happen? It's to try and make sure that there's more speckled or spotted sheep and cattle, sheep and goats. And then you're thinking, that's not logical. It's certainly not scientific. And I think what's going on is God is looking down on this and thinking, okay, he's up to his tricks again. But I tell you what, I promised to be with him. I will bless him anyway. So God blesses him. And it just turns out that the sheep that come out, a huge number of them are spotted and speckled. And I think that's just God's intervention. There's no other way around it. And so he ends up after so many years later, and he's now built up some resources, and he's thinking, right, time to get back home. I've had enough of this. I'm shot of Uncle Laban. He runs away without speaking to Laban at all, which obviously Laban's not pleased about at all. And then, as for the bit of that, what is he going to do about his brother Esau? I think he's just put that he's pushed that down. He don't want to think about it. But then he gets the message, as we read, that Esau is on his way to meet him with 400 men. Doesn't say what sort of men they are, but you think, what sort of men would it be other than soldiers? I am in massive trouble here. Help, Lord. And then he's in the night, but sort of eve before he's going to meet his brother Esau, and the angel comes and wrestles with him. Now, it says the angel could not prevail. What is going on here? Now, I think it might be helpful to understand that this is not a fight, it's a wrestling match. I have to assume if it was a fight, the angel could have knocked him out in one go. It's wrestling. And what happens in wrestling is it kind of happens like in rounds, doesn't it? It's like in tennis, you play a point, you have a rally until one player is unable to return the ball. End of rally, you start again. So in wrestling, you have a you have you fight, and then one person gets his opponent into a hold he can't get away from. He wins that bit, and then you start again, and you need to do it again, and you need to do it again, and you need to do it again. And I think the end of the fight is when one of the partners, one of the people, has had enough and says, "Right, that's it. I can't go on. I'm giving up. You win." So the angel is not able. I think the angel is matching his strength not to completely overwhelm Jacob, but I think Jacob knows that this person is stronger than him. But the question is he going to hang in there? Is he going to hang in the fight? Is he going to stay? Is he going to go wrestling through the dark until the light comes to him? And he knows that this man is sent from God. Some things you just know. And he knows the significance of this. And I think what is going on is that what is being acted out in this wrestling match is the story of his life. He's been wrestling with his circumstances. He's been trying to bring things round to how he wants it. And it's just not happening. And I think the message is that as he's been wrestling with his circumstances, God has been wrestling with him. And what has God been trying to say to him as he's been wrestling with him? I think God's been trying to say, You've been trying to make things happen under your own, using your own wiles, your own craftiness, your own strength. And every time you've tried to make it happen, it's all gone wrong. It's all gone pear-shaped. You've heard about the inheritance, you've tried to make it happen, just made things worse. And then you had the dodge, you know, with pretending to be your brother, that made things worse again. And so they carry on. But God is saying to him, I know you're a schemer, I know you're a manipulator, but there's something in there that I know there's a part of you that is genuinely seeking after pursuing what is good. That is why I have been with you. And I want to honor that. All the rubbish, I know there's a lot of rubbish, but I want to honor the fact that you, in your heart, want to do the right thing. But first, there's some home truths to face up about yourself and what you've been doing. And they've been wrestling through the night, and Jacob has been in the dark, and the dawn is coming. And the angel said, right, that's, you know, you've stuck in there, time for me to go. And Jacob knows he's from God, and he says, please bless me, please bless me. You know, I've just been wrestling all my life. I've been trying to, you know, make things happen, and it's just all gone pear-shaped on me each time. And then I'll go to Uncle Laban, and he tries to get every last penny out of me. And by my own hard graft and my own, you know, thinking things through, I've now got something. Finally, I've got something at last. But now I've got to go back home, and I've got to face Esau. What am I going to do? It's all going wrong on me again. Please, please, bless me, bless me. And back comes the answer. What is your name? And the name is Jacob, Yaakov. He is the one who grafts. He is the one who tries to supplant. He is the one who tries to do things in his own strength. But then the angel says to him, look, that's what you call your old man. You know, Paul talks about your old man, you know, and then your new man in Christ. That's your old man. And you've now faced up to that. You understand. And now you've faced up to it. Now you've understand there's going to be a new man. And the new man isn't going to be completely different from the old man, because our weaknesses and our strength are often, you know, mirror images of each other, aren't they? Dark and light images of each other. And your weakness has been that you've been grasping, you've been trying to grasp to make it happen. But you've got a real strength in there. You've been pursuing and fighting underneath it all for what is good. And you were right to see that your brother Esau wasn't suitable torchbearer for this calling. You were right about that. You were just wrong about how you went about it. But I'm going to say now, you're no longer Jacob. He is grasping, but your name is Israel. You've wrestled with God and with man, and you prevailed. You've come through, and you've hung in on there until the light has come. And now I'm going to bless you. And so the message for us is really to do with things that, you know, we find ourselves wrestling with, particularly things that are recurrent patterns. And there was obviously the recurrent pattern in Jacob's life. Some things that keep coming back to niggle us, to trip us up, and we're trying to sort of fight round them. We're trying to, but they keep escaping from us. And when we find ourselves wrestling like that, we have to consider the possibility that God might be wrestling with us. He might be trying to get us to face up to something. He might be trying to speak to us. That doesn't mean that everything that goes wrong is something we've played into. I'm not trying to suggest that everything that happens to some things are just part of life doing its stuff, and they're there to test us. But if there's a particular recurring pattern, we may need to ask God, what are you trying to say to me through this? What are you trying to, is there a message I'm not getting? And we, if that, if we feel that, we need to keep on wrestling through the dark until the dawn comes, until the understanding comes, until the blessing comes. And I'm just going to quickly end by suggest very sketching out just one or two possibilities of what we might need to wrestle with. If we've got a personality like Jacob, where we're trying to make things happen, well, we're very sort of one of the type of people who roll things up and trying to make things happen, trying to make it do it in their own strength. Well, I think the message for us is obvious. Another thing might be we're not learning from mistakes. We keep making the same mistakes and getting into difficulty through it. So what do we need to learn from that? And there might be something we are doing which other people can see, which we can't see ourselves, and it keeps tripping us up. So again, if we find ourselves wrestling with that, we need to ask the Lord, what are you trying to say to me? What's going on? Give me understanding. And the last one is probably one that we all, an issue for us all, is about forgiveness. Now, I was quite challenged by this. It was Ben, as in Ben G, sent me a kind of link to an online course about forgiveness. And I listened to it. And this guy said, okay, you may think, I mean, obviously there are some people who very, very obviously have anger issues, they have forgiveness issues, and you can see it a mile off. And you may not be one of those. You may think, I haven't got, anything obvious. And he said, I thought that, and then I sat myself down one day and I said, Lord, is there anyone from all any from my life, right from childhood, that you want me to forgive that I haven't forgiven? And then he was amazed by how long the list was. So, I did it myself. And I was a little bit taken aback by how long the list was. We're not talking about things that I've sort of, spent my whole life sort of, thinking horrible thoughts about someone, but just stuff that was not nice. And I didn't make a big thing of it and I moved on, but it just was just, I didn't really deal with it. It just got pressed underneath. And it just sort of niggling away under the surface. So there's some thoughts about any situation where you feel yourself wrestling. Always seek the God's understanding. Always seek to look at what might be going on with you that he wants to sort out. And if we do that, he will bless us. Amen.